Hey everybody, Sarah Grillo here, back again for another show. And today I've got repeat guest, Kirk Days. Hey Kirk, what's going on?
Hey Sarah, how's it going?
Good. Kirk was on my podcast before in the early days, back when nobody knew who I was. Just kidding. And so now I'm having him back again. As you know, Kirk is actually my website person, www.sarahgrillo.com. Check it out, y'all, to see examples of work that Kirk's done. And he's a great resource to have with us today because we're going to talk about the difference between having a website like mine, which is a custom-built website, and having a website like many advisors have elected to have, which is maybe we'll call it a templated website. It has a more technical term, but and there are all kinds of websites that fall in this category, but yeah, maybe
that's what we're really going to be doing too is giving away the secrets developers don't want you to know. Template site.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
And it's my own podcast. I've got like the rug pulled out from under me here, but I'm glad that this rug has been pulled out. Pull away, Kirk. So first, what is a custom website? What's really the difference between a custom website and what I'm calling like a templated website?
I guess the easiest way to see it or think about it is you get what you pay for. Those template websites, they're popular because they're cheap. They're affordable. It's this one-time setup fee, and then you get a website. That's true. Is it functional? Is it SEO optimized? Is it something that you can take with you down the road years to come? Oftentimes, no. Oftentimes, these template websites, it's duplicate content, or you know, you're using a service, you're using another service to buy the template site. You had mentioned some before. I forget what the name.
Yes, but I don't want to say their names.
Okay. There are some services out there you can buy these template sites, and it's great. You know, it's great if you're on a budget, but it doesn't help your business in the long run because at the end of the day, I want you to think of SEO as just brownie points.
Hold on a second. Wait, Kirk, that's a technical term. So I know myself, I am a tech moron. I don't know if there are other people that maybe would categorize themselves the same way, but some people may not know that term. So what is SEO exactly, Kirk?
So SEO is search engine optimization. Think of it when you're on Google and you're searching for Sarah, it's the keywords that you type in and what Google shows you in the search results. So that's what everybody wants. Everybody wants to be on that first page. And the way to get there is you need to be SEO optimized.
Okay.
And so, one of the hugest difference between like template sites and custom sites has to do with that. So when you are by a template service where they give you a site template and you're up and running within 24 hours, you need to stop and question, is that speed really worth it in the long run? Because let's say you want to leave. Let's say you want to do more. Let's say
What do you mean if you want to leave? Like, let's say I'm with one of these, and I don't want to say the names because, you know, I don't want to. Okay. But let's say you're with one of these template sites and you decide you want to leave. What is that? What can you take with you a lot of times?
A lot of times you can only take the content that you created because they're supplying content or they're just saying like fill in like these keywords here and there. So you can't take the design with you. It's not your
like
design.
Like the images, those like the stock photos they put up, some of the wording, the copy. Like if it's a custom built blog that you wrote, then you can probably take it with you. But if it's a blog that they wrote that they just put up on their site or they like licensed or leased the rights to that to you, then you can't take it, right?
Yes, and then there's a catch to that too. So a lot of people are like, okay, I'm going to buy this template site and I'm just going to create blogs. And so I'm creating content and they think that's going to help them with SEO with the template site. And let's say down the road, they want to leave the site for whatever reason. So they want to take their blogs. Well, guess what? You can't just take your blogs. You can't just say export the blogs because think of websites like cars. So you're saying, I want to take these Tesla parts and I want to put it in a Honda and the cars just don't match. So you have to manually do it. So it's a big waste of time and a headache.
Okay. So the difference, but there's a difference in price a lot of times that we should address here too, because a lot of advisors will say to me, you know, Sarah, I'm not looking to have my website be any great big thing. I just want something that people can go to when they meet me or when they're referred to me. that will look professional and that I don't have to spend too much time on. And you will get that with a template site. You know, a lot of these are very clean looking, they're very representable, but they, you know, when they go for it, like I would say the setup fee can a lot of times be $1,000 to $2,000 a month. And then a lot of them have these ongoing, like very low service fees because they take care of, and they it's their kind of code, right? So they just maintain it on their own. They don't need to troubleshoot too much with you. So it's a low service fee as well on a monthly basis, like $100 or less, a lot of these. So a lot of advisors say, oh, great, yes, sign me up. Now, but what's the difference? Like, what kind of price point are we looking at, Kirk, if you're getting a custom-built website?
What kind of – so what Trios 51 charges is $85 an hour for work. You'll find people – you can find people like on Upwork, what's the other one? Goland.
Fiverr.
And they'll charge you 2 cents in an apple. And again, you get what you pay for with that kind of stuff. So be very careful in the States.
Wait, why be careful? Like what might be some of the things, not saying any of those companies in particular, but what might be kind of something that a like very low cost web developer would do that would not be in your favor?
So what a low cost developer will do is, number one, if you go to these websites, you'll notice that they're all experts. Experts don't use Golance, don't use Fiverr, don't use Upwork. It's just not how the world works. Those are for freelance sites for, you know, like the Philippines, India, like those type of countries where they're looking for work. It is cheap labor. You're not a priority to these people. It is, we need the work, we need the hours, and let's move on to the next project. And oftentimes the biggest thing that you're going to see is they may be able to get the project done, but remember that they're not here in the States. So English probably isn't their first language. Why is that important? Because when you code the website, yeah, it's going to be like ones and zeros, but there's also going to be a part where you need to know how to write in English, and it needs to be at least basic English so that Google can be like, so Google can index it properly.
So it's, okay, but what if an index, they index the words on the page that you see, but they also index the words in the background, which is called, that's called metadata, right, Kirk?
Right.
Okay, so like the tags or the kind of like the labels that the content on your site has attached to it that is not seen by the viewer, that's really only seen if you go into the back end of the website, that should be in English too, a lot of it, like the way that the pictures on the site are saved and named and tagged.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the type of stuff I'm talking about where I've seen before where we've been hired for projects where they use freelancers from like India. And what they did was just upload the image file, and the image file had like 20 numbers and then said JPEG.
So, right.
So they're trying to avoid even dealing with that problem. But you can't avoid this stuff. You know, Google reads it. Google's like, what is this? Google's looking for ways to say, no, let's put somebody else in front of you when they search for you.
Okay.
So you want to make sure you're like, you're really dotting your I's, checking off those T's, you're doing things as best as you can. And yeah, you are 1,000% right. These template sites are cheap, and it's cheap to get that business. But what I would argue too is you're making the site because you want customers. You want people to come to you. You want them to convert. You want them to see you as this professional business on the web. Do you really think that you are the first site that they've seen? Do you really think that you're the first service that they went to? How do you think a customer feels when they go to 5 sites and they're all template sites that look exactly the same?
Oh no, you know, let me tell you a funny story about that. There are these content companies that make newsletters for financial advisors, and because I'm connected with a lot of advisors, I get these newsletters from them. I get on their mailing lists, and it's funny because in the same day, sometimes I'll get the exact same email with the exact same subject line.
Oh yeah.
I know. And it's really funny, you know, because you're right about that. Yeah. But the difference does tend to be like the difference between a grand or two, and because it is important, Kirk, because some people might not be able to practically afford what a custom site would cost, which is probably like over 5,000 when all is said and done, like 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 probably.
Yeah.
It's an important difference to know, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it is not cheap. It is not cheap, but it is also, I mean, it's your digital storefront. It's your business. What we do to help clients in those situations is we don't say like pay us $10,000 on day one. We set up those milestones, and it's just like every 2 weeks, every 3 weeks, every time we have something to show you, then you pay for it.
Right.
And there's other deals we've worked out too, where we've said things like, okay, we're going to charge you this much up front, and then after the site's live, you're going to pay us $500 a month until this is all paid off. So there's deals, developers are open to that. Obviously there needs to be like trust. So we don't do that all the time, but we have done that before in the past for people who have referred to us and people that we trust. So you can definitely like say, can we work out that kind of deal?
Right. Like you might not have to chalk up $10,000 all at once.
Right.
If the developer wants to have like a long-term relationship with you also, because with one of these custom sites, it's different from when you're working with a template site, because with the template, the company maintains the template in the background, and then they are not going to tell you, oh, like there's a, you know, a WordPress update, we need to update it, and if there's a glitch or something, we need to spend more time. But with a custom site, that does happen, right? So, so there's also like an ongoing need for maintenance for a custom site. Advisors, don't think that you can just hire someone, develop a custom site, and then never do any maintenance on it. It's like a car. It needs to go to the shop once in a while, right, Kirk?
Absolutely. I've been doing this for years, and I have never worked on a project. I've never worked on a website where we said it's done and the client said it's done and it was actually done. I guarantee you that every client I've ever worked with, it may not be that same day when we give them the site or that same month or same week, but somewhere down the line, they will say, hey, I really like this, but can we also do this? Or, hey, I like this, but why is it doing that? So that always, always comes up. And you know what? Those are the things that you want. If you think just buying that template site and you just pay those $2,000 and you have content feed into there, that's not serious. That's not a serious website. You might as well just put your money into doing a Facebook page because you'll get more out of it. Because those type of sites, those don't grow. You can't compete with a custom site creating unique content, adding more optimization, adding more functionality to it. There's no way you can compete in Google.
Yeah. But see, then let's talk about that, because that's another thing that a lot of advisors, I feel, haven't necessarily considered fully. All right. And here's what I mean by that. I think that the common perception that financial advisors have of Google and SEO, search engine optimization, the ability to be found through some kind of a keyword that somebody enters into Google, or another search engine. I think that the idea that a lot of them have, most people have, is that my clients are baby boomers, conservative, paper-based. They like us to send them paper documents, handhold. So there's no way that they're going to be looking in Google for a financial advisor. This is the idea. This is the prevalent way of thinking in the advisor landscape, okay, is that my clients, my prospects, the 70-year-olds, the 60-year-olds, do not go to the internet, do not use the internet for this kind of a thing to find a financial advisor. Kirk, what do you say about that?
Oh, I would say 100% bogus. Google's the number one search engine for a reason. Facebook is spending billions and billions of dollars in their ads. They're making billions of dollars in their ad marketing. YouTube is huge. It's just so big. I mean, when you were talking, I was just thinking of my father, who's a baby boomer, who just sent me some YouTube videos this morning.
Yeah, but that's not fair, because you're like a technical guru. So of course, if he has a technical child, he's going to be watching YouTube.
No. He's the opposite of me. He's how do I turn on the computer? What's the power button do?
Okay, so you have I actually have two. I have one how do I turn on the computer parent who's a baby boomer also. And she does watch, she doesn't, I don't know, does she watch YouTube? Whoops, I just gave away which parent it was. Oh my gosh, I'm sorry, Mom. I'm sorry. It's probably not the worst thing I've ever said, Mom. Sorry to say it publicly. She watches stuff about like the, you know, things she would buy for the grandkids, you know, like stroller. Like, actually, you're right. Like when we buy a new stroller, she's very concerned about that. So she'll be like, get on YouTube and figure this out, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would tell advisors, I'd recommend, what I've been telling a lot of people lately is look at Amazon. If you're thinking about doing some ads or thinking about do ads work, look at what Amazon does. If you have an Amazon account, or if you don't have an Amazon account, create one, it's free. And then just go around and act like you're going to shop something. Act like you're going to shop a guitar, whatever. And then don't buy the guitar and let your email just be open to the messages that you're going to receive to Amazon, and pay attention to the websites you go to and see the marketing that Amazon's doing. Amazon, again, it's another giant company. And I would really study what they're doing and kind of question, like, if Amazon's doing this, should I be doing this? And what can I learn from this?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I see that, but you know, you do have advisors though that themselves aren't that technically savvy. Like, I have people still sending me checks. I'm actually considering, like, when I, you know, to pay for stuff. I know. And it's like, I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, I'm going to go to the bank with like three kids under 4.5 years old. The bank hates me. They hate me every time I go in there with my circus. But people know they got to, I mean, I don't know what the deal is. Like, are these advisors just scared of security? Like, I think that's a big thing. A lot of them are scared about internet. Or I think a lot of people, financial advisors, are scared of the internet.
I could see that. Maybe they're stuck a little bit in the old ways of doing things, of direct mail, a cold calling, that those type of marketing efforts.
Cold calling less so, because cold calling is such a miserable thing. But yeah, like, I can't believe it when I go, when people are like, I'm like, I take payment via QuickBooks and Zelle, and people are like, no, I'll send you a check. I'm like, oh, how do I discuss this without losing this business? Anyways, okay. So
for us, we've 100%, we're like, we don't accept paper. Just click the link and pay. It's easy. It's no stress. There's no chasing. There's no asking.
But see, a lot of financial advisors are still in that paper heavy business. Like, when I do a website with them and I write the copy for them, a lot of them will send me the changes, like, not even in Microsoft Word track changes. They'll have it written out, like, they'll print saying, like, and in advisors, if you're listening to this, I understand, you know, these habits, and maybe this is what your clients want, right? We can't argue with that. But from a scalability perspective, if you look at the amount of marketing effort it takes to do a dry, you know, like a paper mailing, okay? And that the other thing is that when you go online and you start to market yourself online through Google using your website, there's so much data available and it's free. And that's something that you don't necessarily get if you're doing these paper kind of things. And I don't even feel like the data that I get through LinkedIn or through Facebook is even as good as the data that I get through Google. Like, I'm looking at my Google account right here, and I advertise on Google, and I can look at my YouTube videos and I can tell, like, this is how much feedback you get, financial advisors, okay? Like, if I send out a brochure through the mail to people, I have no idea who reads it. I have no idea if they even got it, unless I call to follow up, and I don't have time to call anybody on the phone because I have too many kids and I have a bunch of clients and a business and the whole thing, right? So I'm not going to get on the phone and call everybody I sent a brochure to. No one's going to do that. Plus, what do you say when you get the person on the phone? It's this whole thing. So there's really no data other than the fact that you pay, other than the fact that you paid a certain amount of postage when you mailed the brochure. But if I go into Google, I can look and I can see the videos that I am boosting with advertisements. I can go to those videos on YouTube, because remember, YouTube is a Google product. And this is what I mean when I say, like, Google. Like, I feel like, I mean, you think Amazon's a data giant. I think Google is, like, it's like, don't, like, right? So if you look at what Google can do, like, you can look at the YouTube video and you can see, I can see, like, how many people drop off after the first 30 seconds.
Right.
So that tells me, you know what I'm saying? Like, I need to do something better, or I can see what the view rate is. Like, if I'm getting a 3% on one audience, I can tell what audience I'm putting this to. And also, like, if I want to market to people who follow the magazine Investment News, or if I want to market to the people who follow maybe Advisor Perspectives, the magazine I write a ton of articles for, or like I got some ads onto the YouTube channel for MSNBC or like Fox Business News. I got some of my ads onto there, and then I can see like what was the view rate on there, you know, if I'm getting in the threes, I want to get like 3% or 1%. I mean, there's other ads that I'm getting like 0.75% or 0.62%. I kill those ads right away. So it avoids.
It's so like exciting right now what's going on with YouTube, and it's so nobody's taking advantage of it. I mean, those things that you're saying were, you can create a video and you can put that video in front of your competitor's content. You can put that in front of a niche that your customers are interested in. You could put that in front of, you know, CNN. Why would you not buy that? Like, why would you not want that exposure, that brand awareness? And, you know, even if you just get 10 clicks from that, that's huge.
I mean, and it'll cost you like normally between 10 and 30 cents a click. Now, that's not any guarantee. Nobody hold me to that. But I mean, I've never advertised. I'm looking here right at my history. Like, that's the other thing. Like, I can see exactly how much money this is costing me for every single thing I've done this whole week. Like, this week, it hasn't cost me more than 9 cents a click. 9 cents a click. Like, the Google's not going to charge you to use the advertising. They're not going to charge you a pay-to-play fee. Like, you don't have to pay an entry fee to use this. How easy does Google make it? Like, for free, you can go. I mean, a lot of people won't do this. They'll need someone like you, Kirk, to set up the Google Ads console and stuff like that. But it's so exciting. Like, Google is giving this away. Do you understand how much data they are giving you?
Yeah, it's awesome. And you said 9 cents. When I hear people tell me that kind of stuff, that tells me instantly, okay, Sarah did her homework. You have targeting set up. If you think that you're just going to put an ad in front of CNN and it's going to be 9 cents, it's not going to work like that. But if you are doing targeting, which I can tell from the cost per click that you are, it's going to be 9 cents. It's going to be cost effective for you.
Right. Yeah. The only thing is I can't always get my skippable. I can't always get skippable videos. Like, you can do skippable videos in stream where like someone goes to watch like a cooking channel and then my video comes up and they can skip it. I can't get a lot of those because a lot of these channels don't have advertisements enabled.
Yeah. So there are some people who are turning that off now. Things you can do too, we kind of talked about this the other day, was reach out to those. So if there's a channel that you want to go on and you could just reach out to that person. Usually these are YouTube influencers or they have a big following. Go to YouTube, go to their About Us page. It's somewhere on top. There's an About Us tab or Learn More tab. Click it, and there will be a summary of who they are. And oftentimes, there's either a website link or an email address that you can click on. And you can reach out to those people and say, hey, can we do some type of collaboration together?
Right. That's right. And that can be great, too, because in a sense, instead of you having to gather, I mean, like I've had, like basically this week, I've had about 1,300 views on my content, and it's run me, I would say, maybe about $100. Let me see. Yeah, about $100, right? Now, no guarantees, everybody, that this is the rate you're going to get, but for me to get 1,300 views on my content, that's about $100. Now, if you go to an influencer, someone with like maybe 50,000 followers, 100,000 followers or more, and they're getting, let's say they're getting 50,000 views on every video they put out, 100,000 views on every video they put out, you may have to pay them in order to be able to collaborate. Like, they may say, okay, we can make a video together and I'll interview you about your business and whatever, but you're going to have to pay me a fee for that, right? You may actually be better off paying the fee because they've already gathered that audience. And it's not just like this kind of YouTube targeting thing where I'm trying to put this out in front of different audiences and tweak this and tweak that and who's going to be on the internet one day. Like, if someone has a following, the person, people know that person. Like, that's actually happened to me with my own channel because I have a lot of financial people following me. Financial products come to me and they're like, Sarah, could you mention this financial modeling course, right? And the fact that people are actually, they know that people are going to listen to me when I talk because I get a certain amount of views on each video and I have an audience and people trust me. So that may act like, sometimes that may be a better, I mean, you can't do an endorsement or like a testimonial video with these people, obviously, because that's against the compliance laws. But this may actually even be the better way to go. In some instances, if you get a really good influencer, and again, not that they have to toot your horn. They don't have to say financial advisor XYZ has the best goals-based financial planning program in the country. They don't have to say something inflammatory like that, but just even them taking the time to pay attention, the audience obviously likes their personality and is kind of entertained by them. So they're going to pay attention to you. And I mean, you may do better than what I did this week, which is 1300 views for $100.
What you also want to do too, to kind of add on to that, is when you connect with those influencers, yeah, there's going to be some that will say, I will do this for free. And there's going to be some that say, these are my rates, or what are you offering me? What are you going to pay me? And no matter what they say, you should always say, one, I want to do this collaboration. Okay. Two, I'd love it if you could include my website link in the description. And if you share this on your website, put it on there too. So don't forget that Google also indexes YouTube. It also indexes videos. And it actually, these videos get indexed a lot faster and a lot easier than those blogs you're creating on the template sites.
Wait, hold on a second. Stop right there with that statement. So what does that mean when you say these videos get indexed faster? What does get indexed faster mean?
So think of YouTube as a platform, and think of every YouTube video as a micro website. So every YouTube video is its own page, its own website. If you optimize it correctly, so if you have enough content in there, if you have tags, if you have the thumbnail, if the video is long enough, this is essentially, it's a website on its own. And Google looks at that and says, wow, they've put a lot of effort into this micro site. Let's rank it a little bit higher in the searches. So when people are on Google and they're like, hey, I need a PPC guy in Orange County, you're going to see our videos pop up because we've optimized our videos.
And that happens. How does that happen faster than blogs?
It happens. So this is happening faster than blogs because videos are the future. It's awesome because everybody knows they should be making videos, and then everybody gets scared about the price tag and the work. But this is happening whether people want it to happen or not. Videos are outranking blogs. They're outranking them faster. There's less competition, and it's more cost effective.
All right. So let's say that I have this custom website. I built, you know, I hired someone like you to do it. You did this, and I have this custom website here. I mean, what does this look like on a monthly basis if I wanted to say, okay, Kirk, let me get, like, let's get some traction for this website using whatever means possible. Like, what would it look like from a cost perspective?
So if you wanted to do paid ads, what we always recommend clients is to have at least 1600 to go to AdWords, to go to Google.
Like paid ads, like those Google AdWords that you click, the Google ads that you click on when you search for something, not videos.
Right. You need to have some type of dedicated marketing budget to go with these platforms. And you need to say like, okay, this is what I'm going to spend. And it needs to be real money. You can't say like, I'm going to spend $100 on this. That's not real because, you know, you're competing. The way AdWords works is you're competing against the other guy across the street at Starbucks who doesn't know what the heck they're doing, and they're bidding on your keywords. AdWords, you say, hey, I want to pay 2 cents for this keyword. And then ideally it's a relevant keyword. And then the guy at Starbucks is like, I want to pay 2 cents for the Bible. And you're competing against those people, and it ups the prices. So people not knowing how this works, it's gonna cost you money. So you need to have a budget to do PPC, pay-per-click. And then you also need to understand that the data is what's gonna decide what you should be doing and what you shouldn't be doing. And even though Google is gonna give you all this information to start with, once you have your ads out, you're gonna have people engaging with them, and they're gonna be coming to your site. And you need to measure that. You need time to say like, okay, is this site working? Is this landing page working? Is the messaging working? So we always say, you know, have around 60 to 90 days to measure results, see what's performing well, and then make some big tweaks.
Okay.
So it is an investment. It is a big investment. Before you actually launch any campaigns, you want to make sure that you have the proper tools in place to measure if this stuff is actually working. I tell the guys here all the time, make stuff dumb. And they laugh, but they never forget this. Dumb for us stands for, is it doable, understandable, measurable, and beneficial? If you're not saying, if it doesn't pass the dumb test, if it's not a yes on all four of those, then you need to stop and redo it. With PPC, when you're setting everything up, they're going to give you something called a conversion code. You need to make sure, like, to start with, that needs to be on your website. What are you measuring? And can you actually understand what you're measuring? So don't just go into Google and launch a campaign without having these metrics in place. Because what's going to happen is a month from now, you're going to say, okay, I heard this podcast. I spent $1,000. I have leads. I have 5 leads. I have 2 leads. I have 20 leads. But was it worth it? And without being able to measure that, you won't know for sure. You're just going to go based on a gut feeling, which isn't the right way to do stuff. You don't need to do it. You can let the data tell you which way to go.
Okay. Yeah, and the kinds of things I feel like you should be optimizing are value adding. I don't think promotional content is really the best way to go. Like, if I were going to optimize, it was funny because I used to think, like, you know, when I first would approach my own advertising, I'd be like, okay, so when people go to Google, they're probably going to search on, oh, I don't know, like high net worth leads or high net worth investors or financial advisor lead generation. Then I went to my own Google Analytics page and I saw the terms that people searched to find me. And boy, was it hysterical, because it was like the kinds of words that they were searching on to get to my website were things like, who is Sarah Grillo CFA, but Sarah spelled wrong, like Sarah with 2 R's, or Sarah with like an H, or like one on one other search, because it was conversational. And I was like, you know, I just was making this like so complicated. Like, I was not thinking about this the right way at all. Really, I wasn't. Like, who is Sarah Grillo was another one. Sarah Grillo website help is another one. What do clients want a financial advisor to say was another keyword. Someone typed in that keyword and then they got to my website through that. Why would a company use financial services leads? Like, these are not the kind of neat buttoned up keywords that I had imagined them coming to, like using to get to me.
Those are the keywords that you can remember. Can you remember keywords where it was like, this has nothing to do with me at all?
Yeah, like somebody typed in like RIA business struggle.
Yeah.
Business struggle was one in there. Really funny. Anyways, okay.
We had a client with PPC for, they were a virtual office client. And we were running their campaigns, and then, you know, every week or so we check how these keywords are performing. We see which ones are actually getting traffic and which ones are negative keywords. Negative keywords are keywords that have nothing to do with your business that you don't want to pay money for. So we checked, after the first week that we had this client, and this guy had so many keywords about CIA services for virtual offices. And we were like,
So virtual office is like in real estate, everybody. That's like, what is a virtual office, Kirk? Just like tell the audience so that.
So the idea is you don't have like an actual business office. You want to look prestigious. You want to give clients the impression that you do have an office. You get a virtual office. They give you a virtual address. That's actually a real address. You could have an address on Wall Street without actually being on Wall Street. And you can have a phone number from there. So that's what.
Okay. So you have this client, because Kirk has a lot of real estate clients. So, okay. You have this client who's doing that. Okay. So they offer that product and they're getting searched on CIA services. What is that?
So what the client did in the beginning was he actually was doing PPC and he was spending thousands of dollars per month. And when I say thousands, I'm talking almost 10,000 bucks a month on PPC.
Get out of here.
You know, he was the guy at Starbucks who's like, I'm just going to pay for everything. So he was paying for CIA keywords. He was paying for presidential keywords, just stuff that has nothing to do with his business at all. And it was costing him thousands of dollars because, you know, people, his ads were ranking because he had so much money and people were clicking on it, but had nothing to do with it. When you set up a PPC campaign, one of the things that you need to be on lookout for is don't get into that mentality that it's set it and forget it, which is very easy to do. A PPC campaign, an effective one, you have somebody going through once a week or once every 2 weeks and saying, hey, this keyword has nothing to do with my business. Let me mark it as a negative keyword so I never get charged for it again. I guarantee everybody who's launched a PPC campaign has negative keywords and they've wasted money on it. We have a lot of clients in the virtual office space. We have a list of around, I would say probably like around 800 negative keywords that we've accumulated where it's like, let's not spend money on this ever again because it's not relevant. So you need to be watching that stuff or get somebody in place to watch that stuff so you're not wasting your budget on this, these type of negative keywords.
Yeah, like I don't know why, but I think it's maybe because I always like talk about my kids in my videos, or I always have in the background of my videos, I have like a lot of children's toys or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I get sometimes my YouTube ads get placed onto toy or nursery rhyme YouTube channels.
Well, that's interesting.
Or maybe because I watch a lot of kids' channels, or like my kids, when I turn on the computer, like they watch through my YouTube account. So.
Oh, you mean you see those ads?
No, I mean, right. No. That would be natural. I would expect that because like I'm always telling Google, I need information about child's things. Like I'm always like, how much Tylenol do I give a kid with like 100-degree temperature? So yeah, no, Google knows that I have kids already. Right. But it's more like, when I advertise for my business, I'm trying to get my ads in front of financial advisors. So I get like on news, YouTube channels and stuff like that, that financial advisors watch, but then for some reason they put my ads on toy channels.
Yeah. There are settings in AdWords where you say like, okay, I'm going to do targeting. I'm going to target guys who are 35 to 40 who live in California, who like baseball and who are searching for baseball keywords. And you set all that stuff up and you hit launch. But there are also functions in AdWords where if you don't turn it off, AdWords is going to say, hey, I know you're searching for this stuff. This is your targeting, but it's okay for us to do a little broader, right? Because you didn't turn this button off. So there's those options. It's in the settings. Make sure if you set up your campaign, go through your settings, look at all the options that are on and all the options that are off. Because if you don't tell Google, hey, don't do this, it will take liberties, those type of liberties. And it may not seem like a big deal at first, but again, after 90 days, you're going to be like, man, I wasted a few hundred dollars on stuff that has nothing to do with me.
Yeah. So I just think advisors should, I don't know if advisors need to optimize for like financial advisor in El Paso, Texas, but I think a lot of times financial advisors could benefit from having their content at least optimized, you know, like when you write a blog, making sure there's the right keywords in it at the very least, because people do search on that stuff. Even if people aren't looking for financial advisor, you know, things like, what do I need to know if I get divorced? You know, things like, what do I need to know about what it should stay on my beneficiaries? Like, optimize that for Google. Try that and see how it works. You know,
here's a kicker that those template sites didn't tell you. So if you get a template site and if you're actively creating blogs and you're doing that, you're creating that optimization, more often than not, the way these template sites are produced is that the SEO juice, those brownie points, they don't go to you, they go to the owner of the template site. So that service, that service that you're paying for, that's a great deal. It's a great deal for them. It's cost effective and they're getting that SEO juice. So it's just another argument to have that custom site. When you're creating content, make sure that it's original content. Length matters. So having it be over 500 words, that's good. And it's like going to the gym. If you think that you write one blog that's 700 words and you put it out there and you think like, okay, now they're going to be breaking down my front door and wanting to hire me, that's not reality. It's going to the gym. You have to do it regularly. You have to do it consistently. Don't forget, like on the web, the way Google works is you're competing against everybody on the internet. So you have to do it consistently.
Right. It's like, what good, like no one would go to the gym and do 7 push-ups and then expect to have like awesome biceps. You know what I mean? But people for some reason expect like, oh, I'm going to write one blog and then I'm going to rank number one on, I'm going to get on Google page one and people are going to start coming to me. And it's like, no, like try two blogs a month, right? For like 3 months. And then let's see.
Yeah. And the thing is, I'm going to toot your horn a little bit here, Sarah. I met Sarah through a client and she was their copywriter, their blog writer. And that client was one of the best clients we had for SEO results because of content creation. If you can't do the content creation, reach out to somebody like Sarah. Get somebody who can write those blogs. Invest in it because you need to create that stuff. Google is looking at it. So yeah. Don't be like, okay, there's plenty of excuses not to do it. Find a way to do it. Find somebody who can create that content for you, who has that experience, who has the knowledge.
All right. All right, good. Listen, we got to wrap here, but Kirk, I'm glad we got the chance to talk. Thanks for coming back. So just leave my audience here with three things real quick in 1 minute or less, Kirk, that they should be thinking about if they're going to develop, if they're going to get a new website, what are the three important things from this discussion that you would want them to know?
Okay. Number one thing, is it dumb? Is it doable, understandable, measurable, and beneficial? Number two, you get what you pay for. So if you are willing to pay that $2,000 and you're willing to accept that, there's going to be your competitor who's going to do a little bit more and they're going to outrank you. That's reality. So if you get what you pay for. And then number three, you know, having a website alone isn't going to change your business. Doing AdWords alone isn't going to be enough. It needs to be a trifecta of everything. It's have that website, do the podcast, do the videos, do PPC, go on Facebook, speak on conferences. There isn't one channel that's really like, this is where I need to be. And that's okay because, I mean, that's what everybody's going through. Everybody's looking for that magic bullet that's going to slay the dragon. That's not reality. The truth is you need a machine gun and you need to be spraying that everywhere to rank and to get that business.
Right. Okay. All right, Kirk. Well, thanks so much, everybody. Please subscribe, rate, and review the show. Bye. See you next time.